And we return. It is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, one of our favorite topics today.
Indeed.
Something you always take to heart.
Yes, very dear to my heart.
Well, we begin with discussion about shelter pets and their often uplifting stories. A documentary, Shelter Me, airs tonight on WLRN-TV, Channel 17. And in the studio with us is animal protection movement leader Susan Hargreaves. She's the force behind Animal Hero Kids, and we'll learn more about her in the program. Welcome to you, Susan.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Anna Sanchez of Pause For You, and that's Pause, the number for you. It's a volunteer animal rescue organization that works to save animals from euthanasia in Miami-Dade County. Welcome to you, Anna.
Thank you.
So just to explain this, we have a lot to cover and only a couple of segments to do it. The documentary Shelter Me is airing tonight on WLRN Channel 17. Now, the one that we all saw, Susan and Anna and I, it airs tonight at 10, but it's the second in a series. The first part of the series is airing at 9 of Shelter Me. So to catch both of them, it's with hosted by Jane Lynch. To catch both of them, tune in to WLRN Channel 17 at 9 p.m.,
and so it'll be 9 to 11.
9 to 11, exactly. So let's talk a little about the documentary, because that's why you're here, to pull it all together. We're having two local rescue organizations represented because of the documentary airing tonight on Channel 17.
It was fantastic. I was there at the premiere, the preview, and it was great the way that all of the different animal groups, there's quite a network across Florida, attended. We had about 100 people there. Mm. And I recommend the program highly, and kudos to PBS for doing this incredible work and showing how necessary it is to rescue these animals that are in shelters.
Anna?
Bonnie, when I think about the film that we previewed last week, and I saw how the Rescue Dog Foundation volunteers were going around the country to the shelters, putting the rescue dogs through the tests, holding up the three tennis balls strung up on a rope, seeing how they responded to a play victim, looking for that victim engagement, I think is what they called it. It was so real, and it reminded me of our everyday at our Pause For You rescue and how we work with dogs that have those same traits, those same natural instincts, and just as they said on the show, our rescues are full of treasures and wonderful dogs. You already know what their temperaments are like. You can put them through these trials, and they would fulfill these needs that humans have.
What are some of the statistics concerning euthanasia versus adoption of these pets?
Well, half of all animals that go into shelters each year in the United States never make it out. Basically, it's 4 million a year killed in shelters, euthanized. And there is not a lot of transparency or real strictness in the reporting. So those are estimates. And the public doesn't realize that there is no farm for your dog if you don't want your dog anymore, and how absolutely important it is to spay and neuter. 10,000 humans.
That would prevent so many of these
tragedies.
Exactly. Yes.
10,000 humans are born in the U.S. each day, and 70,000 puppies and kittens are born in the U.S. each day.
So one of the messages we really want to convey today, I mean to all of you, is to spay and neuter and to spread the word, because it's crucial to not filling up these shelters. The fact that the shelters are all full is not a good sign.
Exactly. And spay and neuter is prevention, and so is humane education.
And also spay and neuter is healthier.
Absolutely. It's much healthier for the dog. It's less cancer.
And the cat.
Yes, absolutely. And part of the challenge in getting that accomplished is that some people think that perhaps it's not very macho to neuter your bulldog. But Mr. Real Men Neuter winner is actually helping with that. He is the winner of our Mr. Real Men Neuter contest, and he's about 6'7", gorgeous African-American bodybuilder that is going around helping to dissuade people from that old-fashioned mentality.
Of not neutering and spaying.
Exactly.
Getting back to the documentary, that was the Anna was talking about were these search and rescue dogs. It's the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation. And it was founded by a retired school teacher. It was an amazing story, Wilma Melville. And their website is searchdogfoundation.org. But Anna, you were saying there's so many dogs that in the shelters that you rescue that have those characteristics that could be search and rescue dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's sad because some of them are returned and brought into rescue for having some of these very fantastic traits that if people would just realize how they could take these strengths and these little quirks and hang-ups and work on them and, you know, accomplish so much with these characteristics of these dogs that are often rejected because of those very traits.
Right.
Well, both of you, what gave you such fervor for this cause?
When I was 9 years old, I was actually taken into a chicken hatchery, and I saw all the baby chicks being gassed and suffocated that were male. And that's when I realized that there was cruelty that is legal, and there is also cruelty that's illegal, and that some people think it's everyday normal routine to be cruel to an animal. And it shocked me to my core what I saw at such a young age. And then my dog was given away when I came home from school, in public school. And that created such empathy very early on for other creatures. And so I'm very sensitive, of course, to their suffering like so many people are. And I became determined to change it. And I was an animal activist for many years, direct animal activist. And now humane education, I find, is the answer.
And Anna?
Well, for me, Joseph, growing up in Miami, I was a young kid, before I even knew what rescue was or that there was a shelter, all of our family pets came from the street. They were strays that we encountered along the way. The situation with the feral cats and cat unwanted litters, that was something that I was exposed to in Miami. And I just, before I even knew that it was an epidemic and such a crisis, as a young kid, I was just picking them up and trying to find the cheapest way to get them sterilized. And my family promoted that. Our dogs mm-hmm. lived inside. If a dog passed, the next dog either was another stray or came from animal services. It never occurred to us to buy or breed or allow any breeding to take place.
So, Susan, I know you've been doing this for over 3 decades. Tell us about Humane Educators reaching out and about Animal Hero Kids that's a part of that. You're working with schools and organizations. Tell us about that.
It's an all-volunteer organization, and there's never a charge for any animal education programs. And what happens, I basically reach about 17,000 children and adults each year with the free humane education programs. And often the children go home and educate the parents. So often children are so empathetic for other creatures, and they know if there's an injustice. They have a great sense of injustice early on. That's why I encourage and reward Animal Hero Kids, like the kids in Liberty City that rescued the dog who was beaten and stuffed down the sewer grate. And there were 7 kids in Liberty City that were playing on a Sunday, and I went to their schools, Alapata Middle and Leonardo B. Smith Schools, and gave them awards. And that's what Animal Hero Kids does, is it encourages and recognizes Animal Hero Kids. And it's amazing how much they can do. Whether you're 9 years old or 8 years old, I've had a 9-year-old that's responsible for banning electroshock prods used on elephants and circuses in Margate and Miramar. So the age is irrelevant. It's amazing how much power these kids have and how eloquent they are at a young age.
That's so good to know. And Humane Educators reaching out is in Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach.
It's basically have humane education, will travel. I'll go to the Keys, up to Orlando, and basically anywhere in the United States.
Okay.
To do humane education programs. They're interactive programs where the children dress up as the animals and do interactive dramatization. So it's never boring. And November is actually World Animal Hero Kids Month. And that's something that we've just started. to recognize animal hero kids locally and nationally for helping others. And it's a great bullying prevention tool as well. And we have a free video that we leave with the schools. We've given out 70 so far that have reached 35,000 students. And it has Justin Bieber on there and Ron Artest and Ricky Williams. Ricky Williams is a great supporter of Animal Hero Kids.
So it makes it a good thing and a popular thing and a hip thing.
Exactly.
To be compassionate to animals.
Yep. Russell Simmons has just given us an award category for any child or youth under the age of 19 who can create a song or a dance or a piece of art that inspires others to help animals.
We're speaking with Susan Hargreaves. She's from Humane Educators Reaching Out, among about five other organizations. And Anna Sanchez is from Pause 4, the number 4, you. We're going to come back. We need to take a break, and we'll get to Anna and Pause 4 You in just a moment. Stay with us.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman, also Susan Hargreaves and Anna Sanchez of Pars for You. Susan Hargreaves, her main focus is Animal Hero Kids, among other things. Anna, tell me more about Pause for You. And also, I was interested to see the Seniors for Seniors program. That sounds kind of interesting.
It is, sure. Well, first let me say that I'm here today on behalf of Carol Caridad, who founded Pause for You Rescue in 2007, and we're just approaching our six-year anniversary. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. You've probably seen us at PetSmart on Sunday, sometimes at Pet Supermarket on
Saturday.
And there's
volunteer opportunities for both of you also.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Very much.
At Pause for You, the only people that get paid are the kennel workers, who actually are hands-on with the dogs, cleaning, exercising, feeding, giving medication, because that cannot deviate from schedule. So those are the only paid folks at Pause for You Rescue. So last year, we placed over 400 dogs. 287 of them came from the euthanasia list at Animal Services. Mm. The other 150 or so were strays or owner surrenders. And all of our dogs are adopted out, either spayed or neutered, with a full vaccine package, tested for heartworm Lyme disease and Ehrlichia, chipped, and the chip is registered. We give a trial period. An adult dog adoption fee is $250, and a puppy is $295. They have to come back to us a couple of times for boosters, so they're a little more. And you can't beat the price.
And they're spayed and neutered already when they get
included,
them.
Included, absolutely okay. Included. You can't beat the price. You cannot get that done on your own for your own dog that you buy intact or you. And we receive about 100 applications per month. I personally screen every one of them.
Okay.
And we work very hard to make a match. We even allow, after a dog is placed, we allow a trial period, 7 to 10 days, to make sure that it's a good fit. Because the spay-neuter is so important to us, no dog goes out without that. You talked about spay-neuter, and Susan talked about spay-neuter, and there's something that we observe in our everyday work at Pause for You, and unfortunately, sometimes the most educated and informed and affluent individuals let that spay-neuter message get past them because they make their own exceptions, and those exceptions are very big mistakes. There's no joy or pride in allowing the dog that you love so much to have a litter, because you love that dog so much you're going to love those puppies, and that's your entertainment. It's not fair. People who do this, they cannot provide for those dogs. They cannot provide for the offspring of those dogs. They don't know if those small dogs could get mate with a much larger dog and disaster on your hands and mutts that nobody wants. So, you know, in my opinion, the message of spay-neuter hasn't gotten through for all these decades, despite all the money and effort put into delivering that message, because of these exceptions that people make. And shamefully, sometimes people that would know better, but it's an emotional driver, and that happens, and our community is responsible for the crisis that we have, and it would be wonderful if people would stop excluding themselves from this responsibility.
And Seniors for Seniors.
Okay, Seniors for Seniors. We have wonderful middle-aged and more mature dogs that would make fantastic companions for people of a certain life stage who can't be running outside for potty breaks every couple of hours.
A little more mellow.
A little more mellow. A dog that matches your pace and your lifestyle. And these are wonderful adoptions. All the hard work is done. You have the opportunity. What you see is what you get. You interview this dog, you spend time with it, and you know exactly if it's for you or not. And the seniors, you know, it's been proven that it helps with depression. It helps, gets you more hours of sunshine every day, more exercise, social. It's a social builder for a lot of these seniors that are forced to go outside with their dogs
right.
in the community.
Mm-hmm. Right, I can see it would be of great benefit.
Yeah.
And Susan, you were going to add something about the spaying and neutering.
I actually was going to say that to Anna's point about some people not wanting to spay and neuter their animal, thinking that because the animal is purebred, that means that all the puppies will forever not be homeless. But actually 60% of animals killed in shelters yearly are purebred animals. So just because a dog or a cat is purebred does not make them immune to possible euthanasia. Plus, you are displacing an animal that needs to be adopted. I always say to the kids in the classes that I speak with, if there were 8 dogs in every home in the United States right now, there wouldn't be enough homes for the dogs that exist right now.
And another message I just want to stress
yes.
that on what you're saying is that you can get purebred animals at the shelters. And a lot of people don't realize that.
And there are breed-specific rescues as well.
Exactly. There are a lot. Almost every breed has a rescue organization.
Mm-hmm. Palm Beach County Animal Control, my little Lovey, the apple of my eye, little poodle-y dog, that everybody who sees her loves her. Was actually scheduled to be put to death. She was in the stray kennel. She wasn't going to make it over to the adoption side. 40,000 dogs and cats each year in Palm Beach County Animal Control are euthanized. And what is so wonderful about Palm Beach County Animal Control is they do not hide that. They let people know that, their figures. So that it encourages people to keep their dogs and cats, spay and neuter. Adoption, spay, neuter, and education, and we will have this problem completely fixed.
Well, over some time, but
sometime.
It is possible. It is possible. And I wanted to just mention, I saw, I got an email from Paws for you that you're having the Putt for Paws event May 31st at Doral Golf Resort and Spa.
That's right. I think we're on our 5th year. That's one of our important annual fundraiser events. We have about 4 or 5 very prominent fundraisers that are key to our you know, helping with our overhead, and that is one of them. And it's at Doral. You can buy a foursome, or if you're a solo golfer and you want to join another group that needs to complete a foursome, please check in with us, and we will match you with a group. It's great fun, a fabulous lunch, a nice silent auction, very enjoyable event, and you get to see some of our great dogs.
Before we get crunched for time, why don't both of you give out contact information for the various organizations?
If you could go to animalherokids.org or humaneeducators.com, which is shorter than the Humane Educators Reaching Out and easier to remember, but it's not a shared E, humaneeducators.com. We are looking for nominations for Animal Hero Kids Awards. We're having them this year in Los Angeles, so we're attracting a lot more celebrities there. Russell Simmons will be there, Ricky Williams, and other stars to congratulate the kids for helping animals. And we're also this year sending a poster and the Be an Animal Hero DVD to every major city in the United States middle school district. So if anybody would like to be a collaborative partner or a sponsor for that, we're looking for other animal organizations to join us, and we're determined to increase Animal Hero Kids who are currently changing the viewpoint for animals and actually directly rescuing animals.
So it's humaneeducators.com,
which is kind of easier.
That's easier. And Anna, pause for you and the event as well. I have that if you need it.
To reach us, it's www.paws4, and then you.org. So www.paws4, YOU.org. And I'd also like to share with your audience, Pause for You is in the midst of working on a future facility that will be very visible to the Miami public, something that will be very comfortable for our dogs to live in and for our workers to work in and for the people to come and visit us. And there's all kinds of fantastic opportunities to sponsor and be involved, sponsor a fire hydrant, sponsor the field that the dogs will run in, sponsor the grooming salon. Can't tell you yet, but when it's announced, you'll be the first to know.
Okay, that's a deal. So going back to the documentary, again, it's called Shelter Me, and it's airing tonight on WLRN Channel 17, starting at 9 o'clock is the first in the series that's being repeated, and at 10 o'clock, it's the second in the series, so from 9 to 11. And I just wanted to talk about, they have something called the PAC, the UCLA People-Animal Connection. And that was the last part of the documentary. And it's using shelter dogs. It's UCLAhealth.org. They use shelter dogs as therapy animals in 40 different departments of the hospitals. And that was amazing to see some of these children.
It made me cry when I saw some of the dogs who were rescued from shelters. Their life was saved, and yet there they are really saving. There's a saying, we think we rescue them, but they rescue us. Because the unconditional love and the absolute bond that exists between humans and other animals. So if you don't have enough cats or dogs in your house, after you hear the show, you're going to go right out to your shelter, either Pause for You or Miami-Dade Animal Services. They have so many dogs to choose from.
Broward, of course.
And Broward Humane Society and Broward County Animal Control. There are so many animals and cats.
And Palm Beach Animal
and
Services.
And Palm Beach County Animal
Control.
Monroe. Yes. There are so many animals, they're waiting for you to adopt. I only have 7 in my house, so maybe you could add a little more in your house.
Anna?
Yes, you know, I'd like to leave us with a message that our everyday life at the shelter is, it's watching the documentary that you all will see tonight, hopefully. It was so realistic and so honest and from the heart. And that is the reality. And there are dogs like that in our shelter, just treasures. And we can only hope that you believe it when you see it and reach out and do something about it.
Well, it's been great to have you again. It's Anna Sanchez from Pause for You. That's Pause, the number 4, YOU.org, and humaneeducators.com.
Or you can just Google Animal Hero Kids.
Yeah, animalherokids.org.
Or Susan Hargreaves.
I'm always looking for volunteers. I have a 7-foot furry animal costumes. I need 4 tall people.
Also, check us out on Facebook.
Okay.
To see some of our testimonials.
All right, and that's, again, tonight airing Channel 17, 9 to 11, Shelter Me. Thanks so much.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Food and Dining up next. And welcome back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Well, it's Food and Dining Thursday. We're here with chef, author, syndicated columnist, my longtime friend Linda Gassenheimer. Linda, after doing these segments for so many years, I don't think we've ever had one devoted to coffee, yet it's such a big part of the day for many, and often what caps off a great meal.
Especially here in Miami, in South Florida.
Of course.
Coffee is a big deal. Well, you know, Bob Marley, superstar, wonderful music and all.
I met him many years ago from my friend, the late, great Clint O'Neill.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, he was an international superstar, but he was also a businessman. and his son, Rohan Marley, like his father, is combining creativity with business skill because he's created an organic line of coffee, and we're all drinking it here.
Of course, we watched Rohan make a few stops for the Miami Hurricanes in his time.
Absolutely, absolutely. But this coffee's organic. It's grown on sustainable farms with fair trade farming practices. And also, some of the proceeds go for disadvantaged children. So you've heard him laughing there. He's joining us from Las Vegas. Hello, Rohan Marley.
Yes, greetings, good old Miami, Florida.
Great to have you with us. And we'd also love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for our guest, Rohan Marley? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And I just want to mention that all week this week, it is so perfect today that you're doing this, Linda, because NPR Morning Edition has had a series on coffee all week this week, especially on fair trade and sustainable grown coffee.
Well, we've got it right here. We're drinking it. Also with us is our favorite wine columnist, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what's in your glass today?
Well, it's going to be in my cup. I'm going to talk about techniques in tasting coffee and then compare it to how you taste wine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Let's go straight away to Rohan Marley. Let's talk about your strong Miami connection, Palmetto High School, University of Miami football team, and then you went on to be a professional football player. But how did you turn from sports to farming?
Well, you know, being one of Bob's sons and... You know, you grow up with so much knowledge of life and, you know, doing things that really, not just to benefit yourself, but to benefit others, you know. And after football, I used to question myself, you know, in my mind, you know, what you know, you're Bob's son, what are you going to do, you know? What's your thing, you know? Are you going to sit around and just live off of your father and collect royalties and just be that guy? And that wasn't my thing. My thing was really to create something that would resonate well with my family. Because everything we do is a family business, and it's all family orientated, you know. Because that's how we live. We live with togetherness. So I was introduced to a farm in Jamaica in 1999, and when I got on the land, I realized that this was my calling, where I can contribute something to a community as well as create a sustainable movement that I can not only support the community, but the farm itself can also grow to teach Jamaica about being sustainable and becoming more responsible,
right,
in what they're doing in the organic principles, you know?
So it's benefiting those in Jamaica, the land and the... But was it a coffee farm? Is that how you decided? Why coffee? Why did you decide on coffee?
Yeah, well, when I purchased the land, because the land belongs in our family, you know, it's a family property. And when I purchased the land, I bought the land because of the river. I had no clue what the land, you know, what the land was known for, and I had no clue. So the community now, after I walked off the property, all the people from the community, they started to gather around. And so I asked the community, you know, what's on this property? And they told me, you have coffee, Mr. Marley. And my first thing was like, coffee like oil, you know. I'm like, really? And they said, yes. So I said, I guess I'm in the coffee business then.
So that's how it began.
That's how it began, because I knew nothing about coffee. And if it wasn't for the farmers, I would still know nothing today. And that's why it's so important that everything that we do, we have to first deal with the roots. And the roots is the farmers, because without the farmers, you cannot have a delicious cup of coffee that you're having today, you know? And so it's always good to be responsible in everything that you're doing, socially responsible, and just being responsible to the earth in general by practicing these organic principles.
Speaking,
you know,
of tasting the coffee, when's that going to happen?
Yes, well, Bonnie is now pouring this Marley coffee. And, I've been giving it out to people in the studio here. And to a person, everyone said, they don't want any milk or sugar or anything in it because it just tastes so good on its own. So what do you think, Bonnie and Joe?
Mm. I love it.
Delicious.
It's spicy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pure, and it has a beautiful, beautiful aftertaste. And it could be wine, Fred.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Well, now tell me. Go ahead.
You know the good thing about coffee, right? It's the coffee is like you know, the brethren can tell you how much wine is, you know, it's all about the taste, and it's really all about how you care for the coffee. So our family represent everything that we do has to be quality, and so it's all about the quality in the beans and having the right bean to get a good cup of coffee, you know, from seed to cup.
From seed to, all right. But let me also tell you that what we're having here is something very special to go with our morning coffee, and that's Sadella Marley Booker's porridge.
I haven't had porridge in years, but this is delicious.
Right, okay. So one of her recipes is One Love Cornmeal Porridge. It's a type of oatmeal.
Linda, right?
Yes.
You told me about that recipe long ago when you met my grandmother.
Yes.
That's nice that you made that. You got to make some for me because I haven't had her porridge in years. You know, she passed on some time ago, and we really miss her cooking. So you might have to share that recipe with us, Linda.
Well, let me tell you something. The recipe is on my website, dinnerinminutes.com.
Oh, good.
And it's really, really wonderful. I made it this morning, and it just... And everybody's sitting here with smiles.
Cinnamon, raisins.
Yeah, but it's not made with oatmeal, with oats. It's made
cornmeal.
Sorry, it's cornmeal.
Cornmeal.
That's it.
Yeah, cornmeal. Yeah, good for the blood.
And whole wheat flour,
yes.
A little coconut milk, soy milk, and it's all. Of course, I add some brown sugar, which your mother told me I could add. You know, I spent time cooking with her in her kitchen here in Pinecrest.
Nice. And you know what's good? My sister, Sadella, she has taken up the mantle. Now, she is the one, every day, she has all these beautiful recipes that she's incorporated the coffee into some of her recipes. And she learned from Grandma. And, I mean, I'm telling you, her hand is also beautiful when it comes on to cooking.
Well, that's wonderful. That's terrific. And so let's talk a little bit more about the style of cooking and also the style of your coffee and what's happening. Because, you know, you talk about it being sustainable. You talk about it being fair trade and all.
Yes.
Organic. Another word that you use is ITAL.
ITAL.
Yes, and tell us what that is.
ITAL is this, right? You see, as a Rastafari, We grew up knowing that we didn't get too much involved in the animal products, and we don't, you know, ITAL means that it's an organic way of life. It's the original organic terminology. It's just that, you know, in the rest of the world they use the word organic, but I and I as Rastafari people, we say ITAL because ITAL is vital, and what goes into you is what nourishes you. So we try to use all the natural things of this earth. You know, we stay away from chemicals. We stay away from like animal products and things like that. So that's really what ITAL represents. ITAL is
so it's really kind of like being a vegetarian or a vegan?
Yeah. Being a vegan.
Well, it is. But, you know, when I was working with Sadella Marley Booker, she did use fish, fish and some chicken.
Some of us mainly use fish. But if you want, you can eat the bird because the fowl and the fishes of the sea. But most of us, we try to, because, you know, life is about how high you want to be, you know, high as far as spiritual height and, you know, spiritual awareness. So it's what you put into the body, you know what I mean? So sometimes we stay away from, because we're a living organism, we're a living vessel. So it's greater to put living things in a living structure, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because we weren't made to eat outside of greens and these things. We're not.
You know, I'd hate to miss out on that good jerk chicken, though.
Yeah, but, you know, you can't... Yeah, but you have to go suffer later, so...
So
sweet to the mouth, but bitter to the belly.
All right. So, Rowan Marley, let's talk a little bit more about what happens. First of all, you only have the one farm in Jamaica, or do you have other farms elsewhere?
You know, I have that particular farm in Jamaica, and I've also partnered up with my partners in Jamaica. They're a group called Coffee Traders. And because I knew that what I wanted to do from a business perspective, that my farm could not supply the demand that I'm trying to create for the coffee entity, that we had to partner up with farmers and more farmers. So we partnered up with Coffee Traders, Jason and Richard Sharp. They've been in the industry over 100 years. So it's not only did I partner up with a greater farm than my farm, but with knowledge, because in what you're doing here in coffee is would say delicacy. You know, it's like very, very special. And speaking about Blue Mountain Coffee, we're a small country, but in 1729 or 17, yeah, we were the first distributors of what do you call it, exporters of coffee, the most exporters of coffee in that time at 33 million pounds. So you know where we're coming from. We're coming from a long, long way.
Right.
So coffee
right.
has always been like one of our greatest product out of Jamaica. So it's important to work with the ones that really have the knowledge. You know, like I say, I'm not the smartest guy when it comes on to coffee or farming, but I've learned my lessons throughout the years.
Well, this is wonderful, Rohan. Yes, no, we're going to have to take just a short break. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with Rohan Marley. We'll take a short break and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and you might have been listening to Bob Marley's One Love. We were all dancing around here. Well, Bob Marley's son, Rohan Marley, is with us today. He created an organic line of coffee that is grown on sustainable farms with fair trade farming practices. And some of the proceeds go to disadvantaged kids. He's been telling us about the coffee and how it benefits the land and the people there. Bonnie Berman, did you have a question?
Yeah, Rohan, tell us a little about what this distinctive flavor of the Blue Mountain coffee. It's really delicious, but it has an unusual flavor.
Yeah, well, because of where the altitude that it's grown in, you know, and also the shade grown coffee, it's good. And Jamaica, you know, we're land of wood and water, so we're very fruitful in Jamaica. So you get a lot of undertones in our coffee. You get a little nutmeg. You can find a little cocoa, you know, and you also get a little berry taste, and it's also smoky and sultry. So that's just by the land.
All the wonderful things.
That's perfect. That's perfectly described.
Okay, you know what? It's dinner in minutes time, and today's dinner is a peanut coconut crusted scallop with a coconut rice, and there's coconut milk in that porridge we had as
right,
well.
Yeah.
So chopped peanuts and coconut, they make a savory and sweet crust for the scallops. And here's a hint. When you're cooking scallops, you really want to get that wonderful crust on them. 1 1/4 minutes, that's it. 1 1/2 minutes on each side. Take it off the heat, and it'll continue to cook in its own heat. So that's a real...
Don't overcook
really,
those scallops.
No, nice and juicy and wonderful. And the side dish is a rice and carrots, and I used a microwavable rice. I microwave it, take it out, and you can buy shredded carrots already done in the supermarket. Throw that into the rice, stir it around, and add a little bit more coconut juice, coconut milk to it.
Can't go wrong without coconut.
And that's on dinner in minutes.
Try Cocomon.
All right. So that recipe is in today's Miami Herald. But if you'd like another scallop recipe, how about some curry-crusted scallops? That's on my website, dinnerinminutes.com. And also Sedili Marley Booker's porridge is on the site. That recipe is there. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. And Fred Tasker, we're not drinking wine today?
Well, we're not. I thought that in honor of our guest, I thought that as a wine taster, I would study up on how to properly taste coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to say this can be every bit as complicated as tasting wine.
It has its own name.
It's called cupping.
Fred, what did you want to say, Rohan?
No, I was going to tell him that it's a science to tasting wine and tasting coffee. I did not know this until I got into the coffee industry, but it's a true science. And
you're
absolutely
right,
my brother.
You're studying up on it yourself, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I thought that you were supposed to swallow the coffee the first time. When you're actually tasting it, when you're doing the cupping, we don't swallow it because you want the notes to explode in your palate, in your mouth, you know? So it's almost like you sip the coffee and you let it explode in your mouth, and then there's like a spittoon technique where you spit it out.
Fred knows all about that.
Fred
sacrificed to spit out something as good as that. I know what you mean.
So, Fred, what are your hints?
What I learned is that you choose the coffee bean, then you grind it coarsely, and then you put a quarter ounce of it in the bottom of a cup, always using the same cup so you don't have variation. Then you choose the water, and it always has to be the same water, and it has to be distilled to remove any flavors from it. Then you heat the water to just below boiling and pour 5 ounces of it into the cup onto the grounds. After that, you dip a spoon into the brewed coffee and avoiding the grounds as much as you can, and you hold your nose to the cup as you do this and sniff, as Rohan was saying. And then you place a teaspoon of the coffee in your mouth and you draw in air, slurping loudly. This is the part that your friends might not appreciate.
Should I try this now?
Yeah, try it on air, Joe. You guys love
No, stuff. I think I'll pass on.
Anyway, this, as Ryan said, explodes the coffee and aerates it and spreads its flavors around on your palate. And you have to savor the bitterness, the lively acids, the body, the richness, the roasted flavors. They say there are 800 flavor characteristics in coffee, which is twice as many as there are in wine, in fact. Now, in the wine world, we would call this gonzo tasting. It's something we would do only in each other's company. We wouldn't do the loud slurping at a dinner party, you know, among civilians or something like that.
With
wine, of course, it's a little different. We swirl the glass to coat its insides and release more aroma, and we sniff elaborately before tasting because actually most of the taste is in the smell anyway. And then we tip the glass to look at the wine and see if it's clear or cloudy and whether it has a ruby, dark ruby color going all the way to the edge of the glass, donating a young wine. Or if it has the rim is turning tan or dim, meaning it would be a young wine, an older wine. Then we sip and we slosh quietly if we're in public, polite company, and we spit and swallow, or swallow. You can do either one, savoring the aftertaste, although we do try not to spit at weddings and things like that.
Do you scratch too?
Yes,
Joe.
Yes. So there are differences, but as you can see, wine tasters and coffee tasters are really brothers and sisters in arms.
Absolutely.
In fact, I noticed that Rohan was finding nutmeg and smoke, and Bonnie was finding spicy flavors and long aftertaste, so that could be wine.
All right. So, Rohan, when you started in the coffee world, were you a coffee connoisseur, or have you learned about it?
No. You know, I mean, my brother Damien, he said to me one day, you know, Not one day, last week, he looked at me and said, "Rohan, I don't know you as a coffee connoisseur." And I say, "You know, brother, I know it's been 1999, and we're now in, 2013? I had some time to learn." So obviously, I'm not a coffee connoisseur because I don't go around drinking just coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker. I would call myself a coffee taster, you know? I want a good cup of coffee. I'll go the distance to find a good cup of coffee because whatever region I'm in, I always like to taste the land's coffee and I think I can call myself a coffee connoisseur.
All right,
that we have all these different flavors that I got.
Now, where can we buy this coffee? We've just all been drinking it up.
Where can you buy this coffee? You know what? That's a good question. Being that I don't buy the coffee myself.
Well, I think it's at Whole Foods here. It's at Whole Foods
Market. Yeah, MarleyCoffee.com will give you some direction, you know, because I don't really know all the stores that carries our coffee.
Okay.
But for sure, MarleyCoffee.com will direct you in the right places.
All right. Well, it's been really fascinating and very tasty week. Rohan Marley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. And I just want to say thank you to all the Miami people that has been supporting not only the Miami Hurricanes, but my family's movement and our father's history and legacy until this day and on and on and on. And we just give thanks to everyone and Ja Rastafari for having us on your program tonight or today. Today I'm in Vegas, so it's a day in for me, evening for you.
All right.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rohan Marley.
Thank you to everyone.
Marley Coffee is what we're drinking right now. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joan Bonney, great to be with you.
It's next fun week,
likewise.
Next week will be about Cinco de Mayo with Mexican cookbook author Patty Hinich. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's edition. Richard Ives is our producer. Caroline Brader-Watts directs. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and digital downloads on our website, WLRN.org. Also, more information and links at the Topical Currents website. Drop us a like. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. We return Monday with San Francisco's Dr. Sarah Gottfried, author of The Hormone Cure. Now to the calendar. On this day in 1908, 105 years ago, the birth of news legend Edward R. Murrow in one of my favorite towns, Polecat Creek, North Carolina. He was the heart of and soul of CBS News for decades. And on this day in 1917, 96 years ago, the birth of jazz icon Ella Fitzgerald. Her career lasted some 60 years until her death in 1996. A tisket, a tasket. One more while we flash on Calle Ocho, Westchester, and Chrome Avenue. On this day in 1928, 85 years ago, the opening of South Florida's Tamiami Trail, linking Miami with Tampa through the Everglades and the Gulf Coast. Some of the towns along the trail: Nokomis, Punta Gorda, Ruskin, Warm Mineral Springs. We leave with a quip from Ed Murrow, who was born in a log cabin without electricity or plumbing. Quote, "Just because your voice reaches halfway around the world doesn't mean you are wiser than when it reached only to the end of the bar." Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.